Okay, whenever you're ready to.
Okay. Okay, I'm going to call the meeting to order. First, Selectman Vicki Fisoro. This is the regular meeting of MetroCog, November 20th, 2025. Let's stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge of Allegiance to the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, Matt, want to call the roll?
Sure. Mayor Hoidick, Thomas Stratford.
Here.
First Selectman Rooney,
Town of
Monroe. Ken Flato, proxy, Mayor Ganem, City of Bridgeport.
Here.
First Selectman Lent, Town of Easton.
Here.
Thank you. And First Selectman Tesoro, Town of Trumbull, Chair of MetroCog.
Great. Thank you. Great. David's on the call as well, right?
Yep. Not a board member anymore.
No, but... I know.
Member of the public.
Member of the public.
Member of the public. Okay. Speaking of that, let's go to public participation. Is anybody here who would like to make a comment? Again, anybody in the public that wants to speak? And one more time. Hearing none, we'll move on to the approval of the minutes of September 25th, 2025. Copies attached to the agenda. Can I have a motion to approve those minutes, please?
So moved.
Thank you, Laura. You have a second?
Second.
Thank you, Ken.
Christine's back.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, can I have a motion? Can I have an approval vote, please?
Aye.
Anyone in favor?
Aye.
Anyone against? Anyone abstaining? I think we're good to go. Okay, let's move on to item number 4B, the first fiscal year 25 audit, King King and Associates.
Yep, Sarah Charset from King & King, Charest, sorry, will be making the presentation to the board. So, Sarah, I'll turn it over to you.
Hi, good morning, everyone. Can you see my PowerPoint? My screen is sharing, right?
Yep, we got you.
Gotcha.
All right, great. Okay, so as an audit overview, from the auditor's perspective, there's been recent upgrades to our auditing software, and this assists with the assessment of the inherent and controlled risk, a recent area of emphasis in the newest auditing standards intended to improve our audit quality. The largest balances in the balance sheet don't necessarily pose the greatest audit risk. There's also a new emphasis on reviewing management's estimates that impact the financials. An example of this is depreciation, but a more relevant estimate may be on earned grants and fee income. The auditor's job is to evaluate if the conclusions are still relevant, particularly if they're carried over from year to year. From the auditee's perspective, we see continued growth in the awarded grants projects with MetroCog, which is always good. So some highlights, pages 4 through 8 of our report are the management discussion analysis. That includes discussions on factors that impact the financial results. Pages 9 and 10 are the government-wide financials. These are on the full accrual basis of accounting, which includes depreciation of assets. Long-term liabilities consist of debt related to the right-of-use leases. And that was implemented a few years ago, if you remember. Page 11 is the general fund. The general fund balance is $844,000, and the revolving loan balance is $787,000. Also on page 11 shows the unassigned and restricted portions. Unassigned is the $844,000 in the general fund, and then the revolving loan fund is restricted. Here's a three-year fund balance trend. You can see increasingly from 23 to 24 to 25, you've had increases in your unassigned and your assigned. The assigned, again, is the RLF. Annual financial report highlights continued. Page 12 had an overall surplus for the fourth year in a row. Page 12, the revolving loan fund increased $198,000 due to the grant revenue and miscellaneous revenue, less expenses. Page 13 is a reconciliation between the changes in fund balance and net position. Page 14 is your budgetary comparison. It shows favorable results. Grant and other income are higher than anticipated, and expenses were mostly lower than anticipated. I know for the COGS, it's often difficult to predict your income and expenses due to the nature and timing of the projects that occur during the year. Grant compliance audit. So you had a federal and a state single audit. So $1,996,000 of federal sourced funds, which is an increase of $405,000 from the prior year. Mostly this is increases in your highway transportation and your brownfields programs. To this year, we tested the brownfields program. And then for the state single audit, the state source assistant remains over the expenditure threshold, which this year it increased from 300,000 to 500,000. This required the state single audit. The regional service grant was selected for testing this year. There were no compliance findings. If you have any questions, you can always contact us at these emails or phone numbers. Are there any questions?
Ken?
through the chat, just I think it's an outstanding result for the fiscal year. Very stable results, and some of you recall 4 or 5 years ago there were worries about our fund balance being depleted and being quite low, and now we're really in a healthy position. I was almost going to consider asking you to lend some to a particular community in the region that's facing a budget gap next year, but that's another story for another day.
Madam Chair, I agree. Having with all of us that were here when we entered 8 years ago and we're very nervous about our position and how we were going to pay for everything, this is a welcome change. So thank you for your hard work.
Yeah, I'll just echo those sentiments. I mean, it was 8 years ago when we were all sitting here going,
what the heck?
as was I.
I mean, this is a total reversal from that. And so kudos to all of you. Great job.
It's been a full team effort, staff, administrative staff and staff generally controlling expenses, making sure we're monitoring those on a regular day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis, and continuing to try and work with our federal and state partners to increase our revenue, which has been, it's certainly a welcomed increase on our end, but, a team-wide effort to have done what we've done over the last 8 years to bring us to a really financially stable position.
I think, though, the federal and state partners agree to the standards and the performance that you have exhibited, because they're not going to keep giving you money,
right,
if or grants or approving the opportunities that you've applied for unless you perform.
Yeah.
So that again goes to all of you and those guys out there.
Yeah.
Laura, if you don't mind, I actually do have one more serious question.
Sure, please.
It doesn't potentially affect these results, but just kind of to the go forward for this fiscal year, the kind of allocation that we informally talked about related to the consultants, permitting, and the Siting Council PURA cases, are the expenses somewhat in line with what we're kind of expecting in terms of using fund balance in 26? Or
yeah, so it's the expenses are more than what we had approved, which we talked about a couple months ago. They're not order of magnitudes bigger than what we had approved. I also have had, as I said to all of you, I was going to speak with the WestCog about potentially some cost share there. There has been discussions at their executive board level about that, and they are in favor of providing some funding. So we're likely going to get a portion of what we've already outlaid for the legal and consulting fees for the PURA docket reimbursed to us through WestCog. So I think we're in a pretty good spot. And my anticipation, given this year's audit, where we stand from a fund balance perspective and what I hope we can get back from WestCog, that we'll be in a good position.
I appreciate it. Was tangential to the audit, but I just.
Sure. But the other piece of that is we can apply for the expenses that we incurred from PURA. We can ask for some reimbursement.
We did that and they denied us.
Well, we should do it
early
again.
On. We could go back.
So just,
we could try again.
Even for a small portion of it, because their staff used our interrogatories and testimony. For their
for the basis
of their denial. So,
yeah, that's something I'm going to talk with Tony. He might join us if he has time,
okay,
just
great.
to give a quick overview of the case and the decision. But it's something I was going to talk with Tony about. Is it worth refiling our stakeholder compensation?
It doesn't
subsequent,
hurt.
All they can do is say no.
It doesn't hurt. Different commissions too, right?
Different commissioners. And I think if we position it slightly different, maybe there's a different outcome there.
Very valid point.
So yeah, it's something I actually was thinking about last night is if we should refile that just to see what they say. I mean, they already said no once, so the worst they can do is say no again. Doesn't really cost us anything to ask.
But who said no?
I don't really know.
Exactly. I think the chairman who was making all the decisions without going to the other commissioners said no. So I think it would be something that's great.
Yeah, when we talked to our first counsel, he was pretty confident that
he
we
was.
Were going to get it. So the fact that we were denied outright was kind of shocking. But at that point, we just wanted to get into the actual filings of evidentiary things and not focus on that. But I think it's worth it to go back and circle back on that.
And when we talk to Tony, we should see if we should do it jointly with WestConf.
Yeah, we could probably do that.
Okay. Off the audit.
We needed to do a secretary pro tem just for the meeting.
Yeah. So as David Vinglass was our secretary for MetroCog, he is no longer an elected official. So we need to elect a secretary pro tem for this meeting. So I'm going to call for some
I'll
nomination.
Make a motion. No, ma'am.
Yeah, sure.
That it would be First Selectman Rooney would be the secretary pro tem.
He's very excited by that.
He's not paying attention.
He's silent.
I'm paying attention.
So you're doing to me what Mark did to you.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Just for one meeting.
For now. For now.
No problem.
Okay, so do you want to make
happy
that?
To second that?
Second that.
Okay. Any further nominations, or do we need to vote on that one first? Are we good? Okay. Any discussion? Okay. So hearing none, let's vote. Are all in favor?
Aye.
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 There we go.
I
unanimous.
Think that's unanimous. Okay. So congratulations, Terrence.
You win.
Would you like a pen? Okay. All right, so we can move along then to our action item for the MetroCard fiscal year 25 audit approval. Can I have someone bring that motion to the floor?
Happy to move motion to accept the MetroCard FY25 audit.
Thank you, Ken. Can I have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Laura. Okay, any discussion? Further discussion, I should say. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
I believe that's unanimous.
That's...
I don't know if Dan voted. I can't tell.
Didn't.
If he's
I'm sorry.
No problem. Thank you, Dan.
Okay. All right. So that's unanimous. Thank you very much.
And thank you, Sarah.
Thank you.
Take care.
Thanks, Sarah.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you as well.
You too.
Thank you.
Okay. We'll go back up to
We'll go back to item
4A.
4A.
Yep.
And want to introduce that for us?
So we have Jesse Schofield from the Connecticut Tire Stewardship that is going to be presenting on the newly created tire recycling program.
Yep.
Jesse, I will turn it over to you.
Hi, my name is Jesse Schofield. I'm the executive director of Connecticut Tire Stewardship, and I'm based here in Connecticut. Well, wait until we get to the slide.
Hold on.
Show meeting?
No, it's the screens are.
Yeah, it's on Excel rather than being.
Okay. Oh, again?
It keeps doing that. I don't know why.
But that's perfect. That's a perfect slide then. Connecticut Tire Stewardship is a nonprofit that was created in response to the tire EPR law in Connecticut. It now has recent approval from DEEP for operating a tire stewardship organization based on our plan. It was formed in collaboration with some tire producers and the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association. We're governed independently, but we have a lot of early buy-in and participation of many of the manufacturers you're familiar with. And it was approved by DEEP to design, operate, and oversee that system. Right now, as I mentioned, we received approval. That was on September 22nd. Just recently, we have 180 days by the law to implement our program from that approval date. That puts our first covered collections at March 21st, 2026, which is a Saturday, but that could still apply to certain municipal sites. Right now, our focus is on engaging producers which is not simply the manufacturers you might be familiar with, briefing a lot of stakeholders, kind of building up this planning for our covered entities, and drafting our participation agreements, which will soon be available to share around for review, evaluation, and developing that process that covered entities can expect. We're also going to be launching a statewide education and outreach program through a communications firm for residents to become more aware, as well as other stakeholders. A bigger picture on Connecticut, so about hundreds of thousands of tires each year would be said to reach their end of useful life in Connecticut. The reality is 2.8 to 3 million tires enter the Connecticut market each year, some going to municipal sites, some going through retailers with closed transactions of their end use. But there's many tires entering the market that need a solution. Obviously, when there's a disincentive to dispose them or a cost, improper disposal is commonly what occurs. That can be a legal dumping that you may be familiar with, generating fire risk or mosquito breeding issues if you're stockpiling tires somewhere on an empty lot, unmanaged. And then, of course, costly cleanups where a lot of illegal dumping or other incidents like that are usually the brunt of the municipality to deal with, to figure out how to solve them and respond to. In a macro view, tires in a larger managed amount of tires for collection and recycling can provide a lot of benefits from retreading options. Right now, there's a large used tire wholesale market that occurs. They can also be used for rubber modified asphalt, which many states use and can improve the longevity of roads. Tire-derived aggregate for infill and construction work. A lot of commercial products can use recycling materials. The reality for Connecticut is a lot of our end-of-use tires go to processors and then are chopped into pieces and sent up to Maine to be used for tire-derived fuel for pulp and paper mills, which is not necessarily a sure thing in the future and is a very fluctuating market for pricing and for demand. Connecticut, as I mentioned, passed the first extended producer responsibility law for tires in 2023. That's section 22A901I. There were some amendments in 2024, but we are the first state to have an EPR law for tires. You might be familiar with batteries or mattress recycling or others that have been pending through. The next slide. For CTS's position, we're trying to engage producers. I mentioned that's not just manufacturers. They're the ones who fund the program with producer fees based on tires that enter the Connecticut market and provide data on what's entering the Connecticut market. A producer can be a manufacturer, but it can actually go down to the trademark or brand holder or the importer of record for tires and kind of a hierarchy to capture anyone, especially those that are manufactured non-domestically. Covered entities in our program will be voluntary drop-off sites. So, for your interest, that can be municipal transfer stations or other facilities that join. And as a condition of getting covered collection and processing of disposed tires, they cannot charge a disposal fee to residents that are dropping it off, along with a few other adjustments. And then, of course, transporters, tire haulers, processors, they will be collecting and recycling tires on a new products. I know here that Connecticut is helping coordinate these partners together. We are not stepping in to try to perform the collections, but to help facilitate that and build up a bigger managed network with our existing processors and collectors. EPR in general, if you're not familiar, it requires manufacturers, or in our case, brand trademark holders and importers, to take responsibility for some of these products at their end of life. So the tire producers are funding the program based on those tires that are sold. They are paying the fees. It is not a customer point of sale, which does occur for mattress recycling that you might be familiar with. That goal is to make the disposal free and convenient for residents of Connecticut, to remove that disincentive to keep them in a garage or a back lot or dump them somewhere else, and kind of advance an ability to build more of an end-use market and be able to scale that with other recycling options that can exist. Our responsibilities and commitments, as I mentioned, we're establishing this network, but we want to provide compliant storage containers for new covered entities that might be joining. A lot of municipal transfer stations likely have solutions right now for storage of their materials, but there could be smaller areas that are joining that need something that's sheltered from rain, lockable, accessible for a collector to get. We want to provide that system to help coordinate, identify pickups with our vendors. We want to contract with qualified collectors and recycling facilities. Right now in Connecticut, there's about three processors in state that deal with disposed or scrap tires, and about two to three that exist in Massachusetts. And we want to supply signage, educational materials, other communication about the program that's ongoing. We want to help coordinate with municipalities to figure out how to prevent non-eligible tires entering the system. This is a big concern of ours because we could call them free riders as the first state that might be implementing this. We want to avoid someone coming across the border and trying to dump them into our system for free.
Like with our recyclable bottles.
And we want to shift some of these financial and logistical responsibilities of tire disposal away from municipalities and our covered entities, moving it towards producers and trying to simplify operations with the expectation of what occurs. The tires that are covered, the law is very broad in what tires are considered. It's better to note the ones that are excluded. That would be toys, bicycles, personal mobility devices, and commercial aircraft tires. Otherwise, any of these other types would be included. That's passenger and light truck, which is common, heavy duty or medium truck and bus tires. As I note here, it includes tires on rim, which some of our processors commonly get to a certain amount anyway, but that isn't a prohibition if someone's dropping off a full assembly. But it also includes lawn and garden vehicles, golf carts, ATVs, uncommon tire options that are not usually considered in recycling programs. And then I note here, agricultural, construction, mining, industrial tires. Some are not as applicable to the Connecticut market as other states or regions, but they would be included, and we are having some considerations about how to handle those. So for a covered entity, what would participation look like? So a covered entity, of course, could be a municipal transfer station. It could really be a lot of other areas, existing tire retailers, auto shops, auto dismantlers, even fleet facilities, or some other manufacturing sites. They would join and provide no disposal fee assessed to residents or other people who are qualified to show up and deposit some of these tires. And we would help manage that collection and transportation costs that occur. We would provide some suitable storage containers if necessary, depending on the site and the existing solution. And then we have other participation details we'd like to figure out. The law does not require a covered entity that joins to have to just accept whatever shows up at the gate. If there's a certain volume of tires from a resident or a type of tire that can't be handled at the site, they're allowed to set reasonable limits on that. So if someone's showing up with one of these large OTR tires or ag tires, we want to be able to direct on our site another site that would be appropriate to drop them off, particularly for a municipal site that cannot handle some enormous tire that needs a fork truck to move it around. The benefits for municipalities, a big one is reducing some of these costs for tire collection, hauling and disposal, reducing staff time on logistics, and improving some of that service for residents compared to what might currently occur. A big one statewide would be expanding a free and convenient disposal option, which helps lead to reducing that dumping incentive and improve site management, trying to find a way so someone doesn't have to decide between paying $5, $6, $25 at certain private sites to drop off a tire versus a free disposal of an end-of-life tire, and improving some of those recycling outcomes. When we have a bigger managed network, we can incentivize certain end uses that haven't necessarily been incentivized right now when each processor is working in the way they prefer and what benefits them the best for their kind of niche in the market. And then providing outreach materials and statewide reporting to understand how our awareness is working, how our planning could be improved, and also enforcement efforts related to dumping or other incidents that occur. So next one. And the note here, so what's occurring in the near future for you to be aware of? So we're starting right now to build up an explainer on what participation, operations, and logistics might look like. This could help any municipality pass this on to their own coordinators, solid waste management, public works to be aware and evaluate what participating would mean to them and how they could get involved. Then we're trying to get our data system set up so that when municipalities want to sign the agreements, they're able to complete that enrollment online through our system and establish a lot of that information we need to clarify for our future collections coordination. We do have a draft agreement we're near final with that I'd like to share in the near future so that towns could take a look at what is really involved in the agreement and how it might compare. And I think the last slide is just a confirmation that, you know, this is obviously a big new undertaking for Connecticut. And, you know, in Canadian provinces, they do have tire EPR as well, managed in different ways. So as we move forward, an important point is to, you know, share the awareness about this program. Reach out to me at the email here or visit our website for any questions or information you're interested about. And then hopefully in the future, we'll be trying to build a partnership about coordinating this and getting feedback of where we can improve or expand, and maybe understanding where some towns have a limit currently that could be an existing contract, and what maybe a transition over to CTS covering costs could be.
Great. Thank you. And we'll make sure the presentation gets out to everyone after the meeting.
Yeah, that's great.
Thank you.
Just
a quick, so with CTS, kind of who founded it? Was it sponsored by the state?
When
did it come about?
We were helped to found by the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association. A lot of that was the inevitability. I think that the legislation was coming through and going to pass. They represent a lot of producers who want to be compliant. A key part of the law is that if you are not participating in a tire stewardship organization as a producer, you may not supply tires to Connecticut. So that ambiguity there and what that could mean, they wanted to be in compliance and they wanted to kind of help set something up so they wouldn't run into an issue with supplying tires. At this point now, I'm expanding to everything that fits that definition, which, you know, it starts to go down the chain of very small participants and some kind of, you know, regional or, as I mentioned, those golf carts, ATVs, lawn and garden manufacturers or producers that are not commonly kind of having to deal with a lot of safety regulations or other you know, regulatory requirements.
I have a question. Sure. So what have we learned from what recycling programs that we currently have? For example, I mentioned to Terry as you were talking.
Yeah.
You know, in Stratford, we have a bottle recycling facility, and inevitably the vans with multiple bags of recyclables are from New Jersey and New York.
Yeah.
So that to me would be one big red flag. The other thing is the illegal dumping, which we've all had to deal with. And, you know, a big tractor trailer or a box truck full of tires. And DEEP has been very helpful to Stratford when we had that situation. And they kind of did the stewardship program a little faster than they would have normally. So I thank you for that. And then the third thing, the last thing is there kind of some kind of a fee that a municipality could get from being a disposal site? Is it better if we do it regionally? I mean, have you even expanded on these areas? Maybe we can have one big one in the region that would benefit everybody if somebody has space. Like, we don't have space, but maybe Monroe has space.
I think it could certainly help. But from learning from other programs, you know, we're aware, particularly of the gas cylinder. I don't know if you've worked with that EPR that's that going through.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of the concerns there or limits that are going to exist. Tires are tricky because a lot of municipalities are already dealing with them in some way. It's not necessarily, it will generate more demand from the public to probably dispose of tires that have been sitting around, but it's not a new product necessarily that's all of a sudden coming around. Our covered entities also are probably going to be, you know, municipal sites, and then trying to only engage others that can help kind of act as a filter for who's coming to drop off tires. We don't want someone just coming dropping off tires. We also don't want someone being able to rifle through storage areas, because there is a viable market of used tire wholesale that has a lot of value for certain processors and recyclers that they don't want people just taking the good ones out. And so it gets tricky there. Related to, you know, DEEP's enforcement on illegal dumping, I think is a big focus. We have been requested in our own last revision plan to better track and centrally collect incidents of illegal dumping or data we can get from towns on how often it's occurred, even historically, how many tires were responded to try to identify at least some kind of trend that DEEP can also see on whether this is removing the incentive and maybe understanding where to target some other sites. For a central site, though, a regional could work really well. Our big goal, though, is We're trying to cover, I think, 99% of Connecticut residents with somewhere within 15 miles they can drop off. So, and there's the other complication that a lot of municipal transfer stations, you have to be a resident to drop off there. And it may, you know, limit some aspects of the coverage could be significant, but only if you're specifically a resident in each of the towns. And there's kind of a filter at the gate of who can just come in and drop something off. So. We have to, our region would work great because I think it could be a central site. There's also limits too of, you know, how much tire volume you can store at a site. Municipal transit stations are very open. Other sites may be limited to, I think, 100 cubic feet or something, about a, you know, 100 tires in one spot before they have to maybe get permitting or other considerations.
Good point. I didn't think about that, the permitting piece.
Yeah.
Thank you.
No problem.
Okay. Any more questions?
Oh, this is Dan Lent from Easton. I don't know if you went over this. So when you buy a set of tires now, there's a fee included for disposal. Is that fee going to increase with this program?
This is the tricky part. And based on, you know, the legislation, it's a voluntary joining for covered entities. So we can identify right now a lot of potential drop-off sites that would join voluntarily very quickly to have this managed. There's a conflict here right now for a lot of retailers. A lot of retailers likely charge a disposal fee for tires they take that may exceed the disposal costs. So there isn't necessarily incentive to jump into this and have charge $0 for disposal just for covered costs. It's something that's ongoing. And, you know, our first outreach and priorities are to try to get those smaller tire retailers to understand and involve. But and that will be an ongoing item that will definitely be noted in our reports about, you know, how we can best engage tire retailers, how we can work out a way to incentivize participation and kind of capture those managed volumes.
Well, I guess my suggestion, why don't you get some of the tire retailer people on your committee, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And there's been a lot of discussion that's ongoing. At the same note, I think there also are legislative changes that are considered too in the next session. So it's there's certainly stuff going on in my own communications and clarifications to Tia and other retailer representatives.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else? So you'll keep us updated.
Yeah.
All right. We appreciate that. Okay.
Tell you this.
My turn. Dylan.
I'm going to go on. I agree. Five, but you just said pretty good.
Yep. Okay, so let's move on to item 5B, approval of the 26th meeting schedule, which is Schedule C, attached for the agenda.
You want a motion?
I'm sorry? Yeah, I'd like a motion, sure.
I'll make a motion.
Thank you. Approved. Have a second.
Okay. Yeah, so just same schedule as always, last Thursday of every month, except for November because of Thanksgiving. Although next year might be, it will be the latter of whatever Thanksgiving falls, we don't
have
But yeah, last Thursday of every month, as we said in the NPO meeting previously, the NPO will meet every other month as we have done for the last number of years, prior to our monthly meeting for the audit.
Great. Any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you, everybody. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Thanks, Derek. Thanks
for having Thanksgiving.
Okay. Before we move on to the rest of the agenda, I'd like to take a moment to talk about some people who won't be with us moving forward. I know, David, you're on the meeting up there. I see your name. Are you there still?
I am here. I am here.
So, David, we, of course, thank you for your years of service to MetroCog. We'll certainly miss your commentary and your, you know, your approach to everything over the last several years. So we really all thank you for giving us your time here and wish you the best in your future and continuing your retirement. And your whatever that brings your way, David, traveling, just having some good rest and downtime and enjoying your family. So we thank you for all that you've given to us here at MetroCog over the last several years.
Thank you, Vicky. And all.
Anyone else?
And all.
I think we've made a good team. I think all of us working together as well as we have. Difference of opinions, a lot of respect. We went through some pretty difficult times with Bill, dying, and it was. I just think that because of that mutual respect, we were very efficient and very effective.
Yeah, I can't stress that enough, that this group over the last number of years, it may be from different political parties, but that never entered our discussions here. And I hope that continues, because you can make much more progress when you work together, as we all know. So politics, a lot of politics never belongs in any of the things that we discuss anyways. And I really appreciate everyone, staying true to that, to our cause here for all of our constituents. And of course, Matthew and your staff has also made that environment possible. And I really appreciate that. So anyone else about any comments about David before I move on?
Nope. It's been a pleasure, Dave. I know I spoke with you before, but appreciate everything you've done, and look forward to now working with your successor, Dan. Met you a couple of times and look forward to working with you in this role. But David, has always appreciated your candor and your participation in everything that we worked on collectively here. So just thank you very much for that.
Thank you, guys. You know, I if I can have 10 seconds, I think the success that we just exhibited with Pura is really a testimony to what Laura said and what you've all said about how we work together and what we can achieve when we do, and why politics is not a part of it. So thank you all.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David.
Thanks, David. I think we can be a model for other places, how we cooperate with one another. So I want to turn to Laura now. So, Laura and I started together here 8 years ago, and it's been a great time for me, great experience for me, just all of your experience, your expertise, your knowledge will certainly be missed at this table.
Thank you.
And, we wish you the best, of course, in your next expedition forward and wherever you decide to land. And with that, we're here to help you, as we've talked privately about. I think we're all just going to miss you, because you did set that tone right from the beginning when we worked together, about just doing what we have to do for our constituents and not looking at the politics of all of that. And we've made some, as you said, we've had some difficult times. We did this through COVID. We tend to all now want to forget about COVID and what we lived through for that couple of years. And it was very, very difficult in so many ways. But again, by working together, we were able to overcome a lot of things that go into our path that tried to, make it more difficult for all of us. So with that, well, that being said, Laura, we just wish you the best. And I know I'm going to miss you, and I'm sure I speak for the group that all of us will as well. Sure. And come back, come visit us. I'm sure continue to share your expertise and your experience, because it's invaluable for everyone.
Thank you, Vicky.
I just have, before you comment, I just have some flowers here.
Oh, thank you, Vicky. I didn't think they were for you, Ken.
Through the chair, I just wanted to add, because as Laura knows, there's other entities we serve on together, and it's been a pleasure. I think a lot of people in our Bridgeport City Hall really appreciated you and your team, and the things we did together were great. I know you'll miss some of it. Profusely, profusely, in particular, talking about planes, but but thank you.
Thank you. Well, I learned a lot too, and really valued the experience with you all. And when we had to be political, we were pretty transparent that we had to be political, and for whatever reason, so people understood where we were coming from and how what was going to work with a board or a council isn't the same everywhere. And that you needed to be conscious of it. I remember when we were doing Pura, the Pura case, Terry was very conscious, and so were you, about going back to your boards about extra money. I know, Ken, you're always worried about money. So, and that was a good barometer for us. That was, one of those checks and balances. So I think we were very complimentary and congenial, and it was an honor to serve. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I would just echo every what both Vicky and Ken said, and you know, Laura and I had lunch yesterday, and kind of express my sentiments. But it's been an absolute pleasure since the day you took over for John as Mayor of Stratford, working with you and your staff, and really proud of all the work that we did with you for the town of Stratford and for the region, but specifically for you and Stratford, and really appreciate your support throughout this entire process and throughout your leadership of the COG with Vicky. It's just been great and truly a pleasure.
Thank you. And I think we've advanced MetroCOG.
100%.
And that's a really good opportunity for you all. And the new folks that are here are going to get the benefit of that because of the standard of operation that those that are here before you perform at and that you are going to perform as well. I'm counting you in on this.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you.
That's for sure. You know, I'm not sure when you want to talk about the aquarium issue. Or
yeah, we have Tony on, so we could do that. Like Christine, you unmuted. I don't know if Christine, you wanted to say something.
Well, as a new person, I just want to thank you for all the work you've done. I wish we had a chance to get to know each other better, but I appreciate that you've left MetroCOG better than you found it. So thank you to you and to David as well, and wish you the best of luck, much happiness in your next endeavor and adventure.
Thank you, Christine.
Thank you.
Oh yeah. Hi, this is Dan Lent from Easton. I'm here at my house at home. I just want to introduce myself, say hi. I look forward to working with everyone. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you. Okay.
Good. We can go. You want to go to Europe if you have Tony on?
Yes, sure.
So we move on to other business. We'll take the item D, the Pura Aquarian docket 250403. Hope the last time I have to say that one. Would be great. We do have Attorney McLeod, who represented MetroCOG and really represented the entire southwest corner of Connecticut in these proceedings. Everything that we did on behalf of ourselves, the WestCOG municipalities, and the city of Shelton. So we had 25 municipalities strongly and unanimously in opposition to that docket and the change of control and sale of Aquarian to RWA. As you all know, based on yesterday and my emails and everything, thankfully, Pura did move to deny the application outright. The vote was 4-0 with one abstention, so it wasn't a close decision. We're thankful that they heard our arguments and the very, very brilliant legal arguments that Tony drafted as part of our evidentiary hearings, our late file exhibits, everything that we did. Came through Tony in a very specific and professional way that I think laid out very simply for the commissioners that it just this deal was not one that should pass scrutiny. But Tony, I'll turn it over to you for any quick comments or thoughts you have on it.
Thank you, Matt. And first of all, congratulations to all of you on your victory. It was a challenging path, but I was honored to take that journey with you. Matt asked me to just summarize the decision, and I can tell you that the criteria that are involved when there is a change of control application to Pura are, first of all, whether or not the applicant has financial and technical suitability to provide water. And there's no doubt that RWA, as the second largest water supplier in the state, had that. So we concentrated on the other criteria, which was managerial suitability and responsibility to manage the entity whose control is being transferred. Part of that also involves public interest and local control. We concentrated on managerial suitability and responsibility, and in fact, that's the basis upon which Pura denied the application. They found that RWA did not have the requisite managerial suitability and responsibility to manage Aquarion, and they did so really on three factors. They said basically that this all stemmed from governance issues that were based on incompatible fiduciary duties that arose from the expanded board, where all the people on the board were supposed to exercise their fiduciary duties in the best interests, first of AWA and then of RWA, and there was an irreconcilable conflict of interest. That was one point. Another involved local representation and control. They indicated that the representative policy board of AWA didn't even give local control to about half of the municipalities involved in the Aquarion district. The weighted voting system that was imposed by the legislation due to rounding basically assigned a zero vote to half of the municipalities in the area. They also credited Metricog basically with raising the argument that RWA, and we weren't the only ones, but RWA would control the majority of the board, and PURA found basically that this resulted in a shift of control, of local control, to RWA instead of the local municipalities within Metricog, Westcog, and throughout the Aquarion area. It was nice to see these things adopted. To the bitter end, RWA argued that they weren't taking control because, after all, it was AWA that would own the Aquarion water franchise. And so it was somewhat gratifying, at least to me, to see in the decision that PURA explicitly found that RWA would have controlled AWC, Aquarion Water Company. That, in a nutshell, is what the decision was about. It took a lot of pages to make the arguments. The arguments somehow didn't go away because RWA and Eversource were somewhat insistent on bringing them up repeatedly. But in the end, you have a result which is probably the least likely result I would have predicted. It could have been approved, which it wasn't. The result I thought would be coming out would be that it would be dismissed with prejudice, meaning that RWA could file again and amend some of the shortcomings, or it could be denied. Well, we got the denial, and you know, it's difficult to beat Eversource in this state, so it is a considerable victory for you. Again, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. And I would just add, just to, and he doesn't need any congratulations, but really appreciate, I've told most of you, the work that Tony did and Chuck for a lot throughout the entire process was invaluable. Tony talked about the first piece that they adjudicated on at PURA in regard to the inherent conflict of interest of the authority board and how they're supposed to have fiduciary responsibilities to both AWA and RWA with the same body making up that board. That was a argument that Tony made very, very craftfully in the oral arguments, and he as he walked the applicants through how that is inherently conflicted, where you can't be fiduciary responsibility to both if you're providing the compensation for the CFO and CEO, and that's coming from both boards. Wouldn't it inherently be that both boards would want to give the least amount of money possible? So he walked through that, and that was really the basis. Tony's oral argument for especially for that one specifically, he was the only one that brought that up and did so in a very, very well-crafted manner. So I just wanted to give the plaudits to Tony for all his work throughout this. It's been, you know, I don't think we would have gotten where we got yesterday without the significant work that Tony and Chuck both put in as on our behalf and behalf of all the Aquarian customers.
So you're
Thank you,
saying
Matt. Matt,
money here.
if I can add one point, this is based on your concerns on behalf of ratepayers within your districts. RWA financed this whole endeavor out of ratepayer funds. There are no owners of RWA other than ratepayers. And so there were millions of dollars that RWA put into this. The use of ratepayer money on something that was a high-risk venture, I think, is something that you should all be aware of when it comes to the fact that you wanted to continue to have PURA oversight and the OCC involved. That insistence on your part will, in the future, protect against the kind of unregulated use of ratepayer money that really shouldn't have happened. Somewhere along the line, RWA is going to have to find a way to explain to its customers how and why it used their money in this fashion, because that money's gone.
That's just a good example of what would have happened had this continued. So,
yes.
Good. Okay.
You know, through the chair, I don't want to get into too much of a hypothetical in a public meeting, but just from public information, you know, the Eversource market value in the stock market dropped precipitously. Do you have a sense of publicly what next step Eversource or what may, and again, I'm not trying to ask you to go somewhere that you don't want to go, just curious from public information available, what might be a next step for Eversource?
I don't know, but certainly the enabling legislation is dead. That's been shot in this thing. So if in fact Eversource wanted to continue down the public authority path, they would have to go back to the legislature, get new legislation, and then go forward. They might put it out to bid again to any sort of possible purchaser, which could include investor-owned utilities, and also maybe a conversion to a public authority model again. I don't know. I certainly don't have any inside information on that. They could continue. I mean, it may be that they would decide, well, let's hang on to it. But I have nothing on the inside to shed light on that.
I would say it's something, Ken, to your point, it's something we'll keep an eye on and certainly bring any information we have to this board if there are any movements on that from Eversource, or if there's any legislative movement in the next session, certainly. Which I
Eversource
think,
would have been well. Yeah, they would have been well advised to contact MetroCog, WestCog, and the various councils of governments throughout the area first before going to RWA. And they didn't.
Okay, thank you so much for all of your hard work, you and Chuck, and thank you, Matt, for the leadership role that you gave to this this issue as well, and Pat, and the rest of your staff.
Pat did a lot of the work came from.
You never
Badger.
Thought you were going to learn about this, though, did you? When you took this
I don't know if I ever thought I was going to get water utilities, but yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be part of your team. Thank you.
Thanks, Tony. Thank you. Appreciate it, Tony.
Thank you.
Bye.
Anybody else have any more comments?
We could talk forever.
Okay, so just quickly, the other discussion items. POCD, Meg, you want to give a quick?
Mm-hmm. Sure. We met with the Planning Advisory Committee yesterday. They had some comments on our draft regional typologies, which is kind of a generalized like land use in the region. So we're going to go back, revise those. We're getting comments from the different focus groups on our existing existing conditions report. So I think we have a lot of work to do there. And then we also finalized our photo contest, and we're having members of the Planning Advisory Committee vote on all the photo entries from all the municipalities. So each municipality will have one top photo, and the person who submitted it will get a gift card to a local business. Sure. So thank you for getting the word out on that. We're very happy with outreach, and staff has just done a ton of work on it. Nick and Stephanie can attest to that, as well as Hannah, who's not here. So we're very good.
CPRG, the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant Program, that's the EPA funding that we receive. We just finalized the second planning document for that program, which is a comprehensive climate action plan, or CCAP. That will be going out for public review Monday, I believe.
Stop.
Oh, stop now. There you go. Stop now. For public comment. We don't necessarily need the public comment completed before we submit, because we have a 2-year kind of update period for that plan to finish out the rest of that grant. So we have to submit the CCAP to EPA by November, by December 1st, which we will do. And then we will take any public comments received and include them as appendices as part of the planning document. But it was just really a follow through on the priority, the PCAP, the Priority Climate Action Plan, identifying potential measures and areas of emphasis for the region to try and reduce our carbon reduction. So a lot of good stuff in there, and we'll be talking more with you and your staff on how do we find grant money to implement those over the next number of years. So that's CBRG. Brownfields, Peg, any quick?
Yeah, just a really quick question. Our EPA revolving loan fund, we did receive supplemental funding back in the spring. We've generated program income through that loan fund. So we have a good amount of money that we can loan out to remediation projects. So if there are any projects within your municipalities, please keep that in mind. We work with your staff. We're always kind of engaged with them, so we kind of know some things that are potentially in the pipeline. But like I said, if there's any development or redevelopment projects that need abatement or soil remediation, you know, come to us, because we're happy to help, and we can see what we can do and get some of those dollars out the door to get those projects completed. So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's appropriate now, but I know in Bridgeport, there are several sites. I mean, one that jumps out is in Black Rock Harbor next to the Fairweather Boat Yacht Club. There's an old boat yard that's contaminated, but it's, you know, waterfront, harbor front property, and nobody wants to buy it because it's contaminated. That would be a great brownfields site for the city of Bridgeport to buy, you know, put a park there or whatever, you know. But I think that you should put that on your list of potential sites. I can get you the address.
Yeah, throw me an email. It may already be, I'm not, there's a lot of sites that, yeah, unfortunately the city is,
and I think they're
pumping money into cleaning, and it's been a problem. But
and I think this site is, there's been mention of this site in the past. Obviously there's a lot of, you know, just one thing with the brownfields program, there are a lot of eligibility determination rules that you kind of have to follow with EPA, so it does get a little tricky with ownership and responsible parties and things like that. It's something we can definitely take a look into, and happy to work with, you know, if you could provide an address, happy to work with Bridgeport on that, see if we can get something there.
Yeah, it's Brewster Street, the end of Brewster Street. It's a very unique location, so I think, you know, it would be great for Bridgeport.
Yeah, I think that has come up in some of our discussions previously, that site specifically. So certainly worth looking more into.
You want more property?
No, he doesn't. Clean it and get rid of it.
Okay. Any other comments? We'll move on to last item on the agenda, which is other business. Next meeting dates are December 18th and January 29th, 2026. Okay. Can I have a motion to adjourn? Thank you, Laura. Can I have a second?
Again,
all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we are
happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you all very
Thanksgiving.
Much.
Thanksgiving.
Yeah, everybody.